You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a production of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson. And today, I've got a guest on who's going to follow up on our show last week when I had a leading expert on public opinion from the Republican Party who showed some insights into the 2022 midterm elections. This week, I'm pleased to have as my guest a public opinion expert from the Democratic Party who will look at 2022 from the opposite party's perspective. He's Brian Stryker, and he's a partner with the firm of Anzalone List Grove Research. Brian's based here in the Midwest, and I welcome you to Heartland Politics, Brian.
Well, thanks for having me.
For a lot of folks, it's kind of overwhelming to be talking about elections again already, but for those of us junkies, it's great. But all eyes are turned towards 2022. And my guest last week had talked about some interesting research that showed some potential problems for the Democrats in suburban areas. And I kind of wanted to get, your reaction to that, what you're seeing and all the polling you're doing from across the country in the Midwest, and how the suburbs might be shaping up for next year.
Yeah, so it's early, obviously, and I think there are sort of, you're out of the end of the beginning, if you will, right, in the sort of like Winston Churchill tautology of things. But you got a moment where COVID is receding in people's minds, right? Most people who want to have gotten vaccine are at least partway through that process, if not fully done. States are reopening. And that sort of crisis that really dominated the election, both from an economic and health standpoint, is receding in people's minds. And so you're in a different place now where people are sort of looking at the economy, looking at it sort of much weaker than it was a year ago, a year and a half ago before COVID, and wondering how it's going to come back, wondering what we're doing. They like what they are seeing out of the Biden administration. They like the rescue plan. They like the checks when you talk about people that aren't political junkies, that don't sort of spend every day obsessing about this bill, that bill, this race, you know, that sort of stuff. That broke through, right? The average person in America knows they got a $1,400 check, used it for something they needed it for, and is appreciative of that. I think there is a certain aspect to where voters are sitting here saying, okay, what's next? All right, and everything is in flux and has really changed a lot in just 6 months' time since the election.
Well, we talk about suburbs, and I discussed this with my guest last week where, you know, it's easy to think of like a Chicago being an urban community city, obviously. The suburbs around Chicago are what you think of in suburbs. And out where I live is more of a rural area, but places like the Quad Cities kind of don't fit any of those definitions. Do you see the Quad City area as more of a suburban? When you break up areas geographically, yeah, in the polling breakouts, is the Quad City region, and I know you're very familiar with it, is that more of a suburb or rural? How do you classify it?
Yeah, so as you know, I do a lot of polling in both Iowa, where I work for Congresswoman Cindy Axne, represents more central western Iowa. In Illinois, where we've done races for Congress, governor, sort of all up and down the ballot. So I think suburbs in itself is kind of a broad definition. And what we mostly mean when we say suburbs is people that live a little bit away from a city, but not too far. They tend to have pretty high education levels, high income levels, good schools, right, sort of like the picture of it is this sort of McMansion type neighborhood, right, where you have high college education levels. They're probably diversifying a little bit. They're mostly white, but are diversifying from where they were 20 years ago. But I think that even if you look at a place like Chicago, um, for for those of your listeners that are familiar, there's a Joliet, you know, in the same way there's a North Shore, you know, lake that is sort of the multi-million dollar homes. There's the more blue collar suburbs. And I think Quad Cities, in my mind, a lot of it fits that sort of mold, where you've got people, they're not in rural areas, right? They're not out and having a lot of land or in a small town that's sort of 500 people or something like that. But they're also the more blue collar, right? Heavy union base, especially on the Illinois side, but in general. And I think that voter is a voter that was really important in 2020. Now, that's the archetype of that voter is Macomb County, Michigan, you know, the auto workers, right? It's been much studied over 30, 40 years. But you see them all up and down the Mississippi River as well, not just in Iowa or Illinois. And that used to be a real core of the Democratic base, and this moved away from Democrats as the high-income, high-education suburban voter has moved towards them. So I think it's a really important type of voter that we have to think about a little bit differently.
Yeah, so there's a distinction between suburbs, an important one, and you would lump a Quad Cities more in with a Will County, the Joliet area south of Chicago, than you would maybe some of the suburbs more north and west.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense because of our blue-collar heritage more on both sides of the river, both Scott mm-hmm. and Rock Island County. Well, I think those voters, I think you would agree, are going to be critical going into this next year. And as we had talked about last week, our area is going to be an intensive area of interest coming up. Why? Because we've got Senate races on both sides of the river, but we also have congressional races. The 17th District in Illinois will be an open seat. And on the other side of the river, again, depending on redistricting, you're going to have two first-year Republican members of Congress defending their seats, which will be highly competitive. With all these dynamics going on, I mean, generally, Brian, are you seeing evidence? We know Biden won, defeated Trump, but down ballot there was some disappointments, and the contention is made that, well, you know, the electorate voted for Biden, but they down ballot they voted more Republican. Is it your sense maybe the Democrats may be overreaching a little bit on some of the legislative agenda in Washington, where voters are thinking, wait, this isn't what we bargained for?
Well, so I would make a little bit of a distinction and say that we sort of know that the Electoral College is biased against Democrats, right, just because of where voters live right now. And we also know that about the congressional map, which part of that is because of where people live, but part of it is just the gerrymandering that took place in 2010. Iowa is an exception to that. Actually, Illinois is one of the few Democratic gerrymanders, but most places in the country, there are a lot more Republican members of Congress than Republican voters just because of how it was drawn. So when you look at Biden, who won by 4 and change, he won, I think, 219 of the, maybe a little more than that, because I think it was 223, but basically he won a bare majority of the congressional districts in the country. And he won basically the exact same number as congressional Democrats won. There were about half a dozen districts where Trump won and the Democrat won, and half a dozen where Biden won and the Republican run. So I think it's more a structural disadvantage that we are at that probably gets worse just because the lines are going to get redrawn and there are enough Republican governors and Republican legislatures out there that can sort of draw them to their advantage. So that's going to be a challenge for us. I think that in terms of the overreach, the thing that I take comfort in is the thing that's gone into law, the American Rescue Plan is incredibly popular. The thing that's likely to go into law next, the jobs plan, the American jobs plan, the infrastructure, is also popular. And when you talk about some of those blue-collar voters, they might not sort of want to hear about the social issues and might not sort of be aligned with Democrats on them, but they sure want the economy to come back. They sure want investment in infrastructure. They sure want to bring the American supply chain back from overseas. So I think if we don't get some wins on that, shame on us, and we frankly deserve to be. out of office if we can't put people back to work. But if we do, I think that those blue-collar voters who have voted for us in the past will give us a listen.
The Democrats, as you know, and with all the work you've done, especially in Iowa and Illinois, the Democrats have had some major hurdles out in rural counties. And this seems to be getting worse. And it was an interesting phenomenon, and part of my teaching I do at the college level. This was kind of a trend before, but certainly Obama did pretty well in some rural areas. But Donald Trump really brought rural voters out, not only new voters, but existing voters, heavily. I mean, some of the margins in these rural counties were really significant in what the outcome was, and Trump almost winning again. Are the Democrats, is there a path for them, if not winning rural counties, but just doing better? I mean, do you see? I mean, and how important that is that going to be to them winning congressional districts like the two in Iowa and the one here in Illinois?
Well, it's super important. And the one I work for, Congressman Ron Kind, who's just to the north of you in Wisconsin, right? So just up the river. And there's a lot of similarities in some of the towns on the river in Wisconsin and the towns on the river in Illinois and Iowa. And then, of course, Acme represents a significant portion of southwestern Iowa that's pretty rural. She represents Des Moines as well. And I think one of the things that was challenging in 2020 is because of COVID, because of restrictions, we couldn't show up in a lot of these places, or we didn't show up in a lot of these places in terms of the town halls, the meet and greets, the sort of like connecting with the farmers that you always had this relationship with as a rural Democrat. You know, that people voted for Trump, but they knew you were there listening to them when they didn't feel that connection from the national party. So I think that actually hurt us substantially down ballot. The cultural disconnect definitely hurt us. And I don't honestly know the answer to that. I think Democrats' best hope is that I think we can all feel that the temperature has been turned down since well, probably since January 6th or January 20th, the insurrection and then the inauguration. But it just, politics is not so all-consuming. It's not so in your face. It's not so you have to take a side as it was. And that's frankly our best hope in rural areas that have gone reliably Republican, is that maybe the temperature has turned down enough that people will be willing to give us another listen.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is a public opinion expert, Brian Stryker, who is from the Midwest here, lives in the Midwest. He's a partner with the Democratic polling firm of Anzalone List Grove Research. I've had him, invited him on today in response or after the Republican pollster I had on last week, just to kind of get a view from what the public opinion experts are seeing in the electorate here as we head up to a crucial election next year. It seems like they all are anymore, the midterm elections. Brian and I have been talking a little bit. He was giving some of his views on some of the key suburban voters and the classification of suburbs and where Scott and Rock Island County fit in. We talked a little bit about rural voters. I want to kind of dig more into this. It's an interesting topic of and you've mentioned this, culture and economics, how the parties are shaking out here. The Republican Party, and we'll ask you to talk about them here in a minute too, but how in your research, Brian, is there a way of finding out, or have you seen, is Are a lot of these voters, you know, and as you know, the Obama-Trump counties were more numerous in Iowa than any other state in the nation, and quite a few here in Illinois, where we're at, Wisconsin, Minnesota. But do these voters, are you seeing a lot of voters place more of an emphasis on culture over economics? In other words, if people really love what Biden's doing on the economy, will they still perhaps go against Democrats because of other issues like maybe policing issues, immigration, things like that?
Well, and it's funny because everyone says they want you to focus on the economy, and then it seems like all the distractions of the day are cultural, right? Like that's kind of what drove our politics. And I would say drove high-income, high-education voters in the suburbs to Democrats. At the same time, it drove more more culturally conservative blue-collar voters to Republicans who had used to vote on almost exclusively economic issues. And I definitely think culture is starting to take over our politics, even as much as we try and fight it, because I don't think as Democrats that's especially helpful for us. We get that, especially in the Midwest. I don't have a great answer for you in terms of how do we make the politics less about culture and can it be less about culture. I do know that the Democrats who win in places like, for example, we work for the governor of Louisiana, who's Democrat. He ran and won on expanding Medicaid, on getting people health care. And that was all he talked about in the campaign, not it, but, you know, the primary focus. And so to the extent that the Democrats are focused on that and it's just one note and feels almost boring, that we're getting you something, we're putting something in your pocket, we're helping you out, like, that's our best path to stop making our elections about culture, which is not helping us in the Midwest.
Yeah, I asked that because I've had numerous guests on, and we've talked about the Thomas Frank book, What's the Matter with Kansas, mm-hmm. and his thesis that people, when working class voters vote Republican, they're not voting their own interests. But I think that takes into account that their financial interests, economic interests are their only focus, and they for a lot of voters, we're finding out they're not. We may think they should be, but they're not. Their primary interest is in other areas.
Yeah, I mean, and then I think that's then it's first of all, it's who are you to tell someone what their interests are,
right?
Like,
right.
It's a democracy. We all get to make up our own minds and what's important. And I certainly have a whole host of issues that are important to me besides, you know, who's going to put money in my pocket, whether it's a, you know, tax break or a job program or whatever it may be. And you're seeing that same thing in the high income suburbs where maybe they're strict financial interests, I would argue this isn't true, but they might have thought in the past that their strict financial interests are Republicans who are going to keep their property taxes down and stuff like that. But they're walking away because they can't do it. They can't do it with Trump anymore.
You represent two clients you've mentioned here, Congressman Kind, right across the border in southwest Wisconsin, and Congresswoman Axne in Iowa. They happen to be two of only seven Democrats in Congress who won in districts Donald Trump won. What a revealing statistic on how polarized our hyperpartisan our politics are. When you and I don't expect you to reveal any secrets or anything because I know there are some on both sides and how they interpret data. But are you? I'm sure you've seen a sea change when your career started. Maybe looking trying to find that little slice of voters that will vote come over and vote a split ticket. I mean, there just doesn't seem to be that many left anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, Ron Kind used to win with, you know, 70-80%. Now, the district used to be more Democratic, but no, 100%, it's gotten less, people feel less comfortable doing that.
Yeah, it seems like something happened, and the Great Recession really seemed to have provoked a change in attitudes, a change in voting behavior back in the late 2000s, and then that kind of manifested itself. Obama won big in 08, and then he won a somewhat closer election in 12, but then Trump seemed to really bring this out of these voters, the anger that they had. Were they mad at economically? Were they mad because our culture's changing? And that manifests in votes for Trump. What did you see in your research?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that they felt left behind by the coasts, by the cities, by, you know, the sort of perceived elites, and some of that was economic in terms of nobody seems to really care in their view that their jobs were being shipped overseas and that companies were packing up that their towns were losing out. And I think some of it was definitely cultural. They just didn't feel like they sort of mattered as much in the sort of scheme of things and what they were seeing in culture and TV and media and all that sort of stuff. So I think it's both. It's hard to separate out race from that, but I think it's not just one thing to me.
One topic I've asked guests who've had experience working in Iowa, and I know this is a tough question, but you know, Illinois is solidly blue, obviously. But Iowa, for many, many years, as you know, was very competitive. But the last couple election cycles, it's voted Republican pretty much in most all the key races. Do you think and there's been a sea change between 10 years ago, the idea of somebody winning in Congresswoman Axne's district would have been laughable, really. But now she wins. And then the thought of Republicans holding both districts along the Mississippi River, people wouldn't have believed. Is Iowa still potentially a Democratic state at the presidential and statewide level, do you think?
Well, I think the presidential – here's one thing I would say at the presidential level is any of us would have wrote down some predictions 5 years ago about where we'd be at now, it'd be comical, right? So I think saying that Iowa's gone for a generation or something, I don't know. And I don't know how our politics – change when Trump leaves the scene, and I don't know when that is, right? I do think that we kind of have to walk into 22 and 24 thinking that Iowa is an R state. I mean, barely, you know, sort of maybe light red, but red. I will say, though, Illinois is much more Democratic than Iowa is Republican, and we elected a Republican governor in 2014, and we almost did it in 2010, too. So, especially at the governor's level, I think people are a little more open and they listen and they you know, don't go one way or the other, not so much on party. You got Democratic governors in Louisiana and Republican ones in Massachusetts and Vermont, right? I think that you got to, if you're going to be clear-eyed about it, Republicans have an advantage going into basically every statewide election in Iowa right now because of those changes that you outlined in eastern Iowa. And some of the rural counties that, you know, Democrats, Obama might have lost but pulled 45% out of, and now we're getting 25-30.
I was going to ask, too, for our listeners who may not don't follow politics as much as we do, the rule of thumb is that the party not holding the White House does worse in these off-year elections. In other words, since Biden's in the White House, a Democrat, history shows that the Republicans will do well in this upcoming off-year election, 2022. Why is that?
Even if people think things are going well, it's just not as motivating to go show up when you're satisfied, right? Like, when you're mad, that's a motivator, mm-hmm. right? And I think that a lot of the Democrats on this listening can remember how mad they were in 2018 at everything Trump was doing, and that they would have, you know, gone through anything to get out there and vote. They were so mad. But probably didn't feel that way in 2010. And it was the Republicans in the Tea Party moment, you know, in the frustration over the Affordable Care Act at that time, that were mad. And that showed up. So I just think that being mad is a really good motivator. So that's a big part of it.
Yeah, it seems to be. I want to switch in the last couple minutes here of our chat today and talk about a recent report that came out that was done by the public opinion industry, pollsters like you, who looked at the results, some of the issues in 2020. And I thought it was a very frank report, objective report on some of the shortcomings. As a pollster, a professional pollster, I mean, what you can perhaps summarize a little bit what the finding was and perhaps what you may be looking at as ways to try to address those shortcomings that, you know, as you're aware, most everybody was anticipating a bigger Democratic win in 2020 that didn't happen.
Yeah. And I was one of our firm, and I had a hand in this, is one of the five Democratic polling firms that usually compete against each other. And we'll all try and sort of win business from people based on being more accurate than anybody else. And that's sort of part of our line in a lot of these, you know, past years. And we all figured, okay, there's a problem. We got to set our egos aside, set our competitive nature aside, and set, you know, we're businesses, but more importantly, we're Democrats, and we want to see Democrats do well. And so set all that aside and go all get together and figure out what went wrong. And I, there are a few things that I think are a piece of what went wrong. And I think that's one of the stories, is that it's not one thing. A little bit of it was we underestimated how many Trump voters would turn out. That's always a guess. This was a very small part of it. But we probably underestimated by a margin of a point or something like that. There was a bigger piece was that we just had a harder time of getting a Trump voter on the phone. So, for example, if you were an independent voter and you supported Biden, you were more likely to respond to us than a Trump voter. Even, you know, if you're the same person, if you're a 37-year-old non-college woman independent voter, just by nature of you answering the phone this cycle, you are more likely to support Trump. And we don't know why that is yet, and we can't isolate it. We're trying to work on it. I have a few theories, but one of the big ones is that there's this so COVID was a piece of it, and Democrats were more likely to be in and wanting to answer their phones. But another piece of it is social trust. Is basically, if you ask people a very simple question, which is you can trust most people most of the time, or you can't trust most people, and make them choose between one of those two. Saying you can't trust people makes you much more likely to vote for Donald Trump. I think it makes you much less likely to talk to us too. So those Trump voters who are suspicious in general of people around them are suspicious of numbers they don't know calling them. And you know, this is a problem all across the spectrum. The number of people we have to call to get someone on the phone just goes up and up. But I think politics and ideology play a role in that. It didn't before, frankly. That wasn't part of Obama. That wasn't part of Kerry Bush. Like, that trust just wasn't a factor of our politics. But I think just suspicion of each other is driving our politics so much, and that's causing us problems.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out with Trump out of the White House, not off the scene, out of the scene, but out of the White House. Mm-hmm. It'll be really interesting to see how this plays out and next year and then the next presidential race. Brian Stryker has been our guest today. Brian, I really want to thank you for taking the time to come on. That was some very interesting stuff, and I hope our listeners have a little better understanding of polling and some of the challenges with it, but also some of the key themes going into next year. Thanks so much for coming on, and hope to have you back on at some point.
Thanks. It was great talking to you, and that'd be great. We'll talk soon.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at wvik.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.